This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. The Cincinnati Gardens have been home to NBA basketball, high school and college sports, minor league hockey. The Beatles performed in concert at the Gardens. There have been political rallies, faith-based events, musicals, and roller derby. It's a rich history full of memories. And joining us to talk about the history of the Cincinnati Gardens and to listen to your memories, our Director of Public Relations and Media Relations for the Gardens, Greg Waddell, longtime local sports writer, now at WCPO.com, Mike Dyer, and WVXU Media Beat blogger, John Keysweater. You can join the conversation, 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And John, Greg, and Mike, good to see everybody this afternoon.
How you doing, Mark?
With you, Mark?
Great, thank
good
you.
To see you.
Greg, give us a little history about the gardens. How did the gardens get their start in the first place?
Well, the gardens opened in 1949. It was at the time
67 years
67
ago.
Years, yeah. Back in February, it was the 67th anniversary of the building. And at the time, it was among the biggest arenas in the country at that point. So not just the city of Cincinnati like we have now where we have multiple arenas. But you know, when you think back to when the building was first opened up, I don't know if Cincinnati was a hot spot for a lot of traveling type of events, but there were enough local types of events that there was a need to create an arena like that. And the vision that the original group had to create that arena, modeled after an existing arena in Toronto, the Maple Leafs Garden, the Cincinnati Gardens opened in 1949, and it's been here now for 67 years and tons of history.
What was the first event? It was a hockey game.
It was hockey. Yeah, it was an exhibition hockey game. Of course, yeah. And I think that the building probably is best known for hockey, but it was an exhibition hockey game. The Montreal Canadiens, who at that point were everything. They were the New York Yankees of hockey at that point, played an exhibition game against a team out of Dallas who would become the minor league affiliate of the Montreal Canadiens the following year.
And that first week turned out to be a pretty gangbuster first week for the Gardens.
It ran the gamut. You had the hockey, you had basketball, you had college basketball that drew huge crowds, and then boxing. The three statues that are in the front of the building are basketball, hockey, and boxing, and those were the three first events of the building.
And I got to tell you, those are the things that's my best memory of the gardens. I loved the carved athletic figures in the side of the building. They're just so impressive, and I remember going to events as a kid, and I was just always in awe of those, especially if you went to something at night where they had them. They had the light on them. And
they're beautiful.
They are beautiful.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Everybody remembers that.
Absolutely. Again, 513-419-7100 if you'd like to join us. And Greg, have we kept track over the more than six-plus decades of how much of a draw this has been, how many people have passed through the doors at the Gardens?
You know, there kind of been two different eras of the buildings, and both Mike and John will be able to kind of help me digest a lot of that. You know, the first era went from the early days, 1949, until the mid-1970s. And then
after the Royals left.
After the Royals left, yeah. In 72, the Swords played the hockey team, the American Hockey League Cincinnati Swords played for another year till 1974. There was some smaller little events for a couple of years, but the building was somewhat closed down for a few years until 1979, and then that started somewhat the second era of
the
building.
That was the new era for the building.
Until bringing us up to 2016.
Which had three or four hockey teams. You had UC and Xavier as their home court. You had a lot of rock and roll, a lot of wrestling, just a bunch of different events with the Robinsons.
Well, I mean, hockey kind of got its resurgence, and the Robinson family you mentioned, yep. I've worked with Pete Robinson now for me 10 years, but I had some tie-ins as well with the hockey teams that were there, the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks. Hockey kind of got its resurgence at the Gardens when the Cyclones actually played starting in 1990, and they came in and they were drawing like gangbusters. They were putting, regularly sell-out crowds, 8,000, 9,000, 10,000 in there regularly. So hockey drawing that kind of crowds in the city of Cincinnati, a non-traditional hockey market, it was a pretty cool thing to see, and it was I think what led to the hockey resurgence that kind of went through the 90s and into the 2000s, of course, Cyclones still here, and then the Mighty Ducks continued at the Gardens after the Cyclones left.
Xavier had an exquisite record there.
Well, yeah, the home court advantage that the Cincinnati Gardens allowed Xavier during the years, and let's face it, Xavier University basketball now is among the elite college basketball programs in the country.
I think during those years, they were in the Midwestern Collegiate Conference.
Correct.
At that time.
When they were
the
MCC. And they started in the fall of 83. They came in after some other, they had been at other arenas, some on campus, that they knew that they needed to take the next step. And at that point, didn't have a big enough on campus arena. So Xavier in 83 came in the MCC and then started their run. Bob Stack was the coach, and then Pete Gillen was the coach. And after that, the late great Skip Prosser was the coach, and took them on their upward trajectory that I argue, you know, that if they wouldn't have had those days and that home court advantage you were talking about, Mike, I don't think that they would be where they're at now and showing what they are as a national power.
Definitely.
And speaking of that, Mike, Bernard on Twitter says the 1996 game, Xavier versus UMass, loudest game he's ever been to.
John Calipari, John Marcus Calipari, Camby. Right?
Yeah, and he says Xavier lost that one. I think it was 78-74 is what Bernard says.
I saw some NIT games. Did they play Princeton?
The first year.
Yeah.
That 83-84 season, they ended up beating, was it Oklahoma? And
Ohio State?
Oh, it was Ohio State. Yeah, I think it was Ohio State. Yeah, they had a couple of big wins that first season in the Gardens, and that kind of got them on their way.
Let's talk with Bonnie and Clifton. Hi, Bonnie.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you. So what's your memory?
At 12 years old, I saw Mr. Robinson on the basketball court with the Royals, and we'll never forget it, seeing Oscar playing.
That was an experience.
Yes. My family was a big sports family, and they wanted to make sure that I saw him. I fast-forwarded to 1968, November 15th, Friday night, 8 o'clock. We sat with Royal to see Jimi Hendrix.
Bonnie, unfortunately, your signal's breaking up, and it's hard to hear.
I'm so sorry.
Okay, but you were saying 1968 was the year?
Yes, it was.
And it was who?
Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah. Bonnie, thank you so much for the call and the memory. We really do appreciate that.
Well, you know, the Royals had a great team in the 60s when you had Oscar Robertson, Jerry Lucas, Connie Durking, Jack Twyman. Yeah. But they were in the Eastern Division. They always ran against the Celtics or the Philadelphia Warriors with Wilt Chamberlain. And so they get into the playoffs and get knocked out the very first round.
Definitely. I think one of the stories I think most people remember from the early time of the Royals, they came here in 57 from Rochester. But in 64, during the playoffs against the Celtics, actually couldn't play at the Gardens because the circus was there. So they had to actually go to Schmidt Fieldhouse there at Xavier. But yeah, you're right. I mean, you know, you talk about the Celtics' dominance of the 60s and Bill Russell. I mean, really, that prevented the Royals from winning the title.
I had heard an interesting story, too, about the Royals being in the Eastern Conference at that point. When they moved from Rochester, that franchise was in the East. Well, they moved west to Cincinnati, but kept them in the Eastern Division, and the Chicago Bulls were a team that were coming in. There was something to do with – there was one team that was farther east that was in the Western Conference – and one team that was in the West, that was farther west, that probably should have been in the West, but still remained in the East. If the Royals could have moved over to the Western Conference and maybe not had to face the Celtics year after year after year, maybe they would have faced in a championship matchup instead of being like some of those great teams in the 60s, instead of being in the East and having to play in the playoffs to get to the championship.
We will continue our conversation about the Cincinnati Gardens, and you can share your memories at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Joining us to talk about the history of the Cincinnati Gardens and to listen to your memories, our Director of Public Relations and Media Relations for the Gardens, Greg Waddell, longtime local sports writer, now WCPO.com, Mike Dyer, and WVXU Media beat blogger, John Keysweater. You can join us at 513-419-7100. You can email talk at WVXU.org. Or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And joining us right now by phone is Lauren Bishop. And Lauren is one of the original founders of the Cincinnati Roller Girls Roller Derby team. And Lauren, good afternoon. Glad to have you here. Lauren, you've skated under the name Misprint. So I was wondering how you came up with that name.
I was a reporter at the Cincinnati Inquirer with John Keysweater. Actually, we were there at the same time. So the name was inspired by you know, just kind of poking fun at my profession.
Lauren, when you first went into that building the very first day, what did you think of? What came to mind?
I was just in awe. I remember our first season was 2006. We didn't start playing at the Garden until 2007, but sometime in late 2006 or early 2007, we went in to check it out. And I'm not from Cincinnati, so I had never been in there before. I didn't know anything about the Gardens. And, you know, in our first season, we had just been playing at local skating rinks. So walking in there, I think everybody's jaws just dropped. And we're all just like, we're going to be playing here? I mean, we couldn't believe it. And, you know, we've always felt so fortunate to have had the experience playing there with all the history of the Gardens.
Well, and Lauren, and this is Greg, you know, when the Roller Girls started in 07, that was my first year working at the Gardens as well. And one of the first projects I had was the Cincinnati Roller Girls. We got to promote roller derby. And I'm thinking to myself, what? What have I gotten myself into?
Right.
Yeah, so, and it honestly, in the 10 years.
Now you're a big fan, aren't you?
I love it is an amazing thing to watch what these women do on the track. They work so hard, and it's not the old scripted roller derby that the Gardens had.
Right.
Many, many great crowds over the years. But these girls and these women worked so hard to craft their sport, and it's been fun working with Lauren over all these years, and she went from being a skater to now being behind the scenes and really keeping things going very well for the team.
Hey, Lauren, what's your favorite memory of being at the Gardens?
My favorite memory is probably the night that we had our biggest crowd ever, which was our home opener in March of 2011. We had over 4,100 people in attendance, and that was just, and I was skating in that game. That was actually my last season. That was the first game of my last season skating, and it was just an incredible feeling. I mean, I had never played a sport before at all, much less a full contact sport on roller skates in front of 4,000 people. Just to hear that many people cheering for me, and I think all of us felt that way. It was just a phenomenal feeling, and something I'll never forget.
I think a lot of people that have gone to the building over the years, and John, you could probably attest to this, probably found ways to sneak into the building. There were that night, Lauren, there were more than 4,100 people in the building. I'm convinced of it. It was so fun to see all the hard work that you had put in there, and the reward for that night. That was really a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And Lauren, I have to ask you about this. We had a comment from Carly, who says her first memory at the Gardens was 1996 when she saw Pocahontas on ice. She says years later in 2016, she took the floor as a Cincinnati Roller Girl for the first time.
Oh, and, I know, Carly. Yeah, that's really cool.
So see how you – I like what she says here. She says when you practice three times a week at the Gardens, you become intimate with it. A person. And she said, I knew the nooks, the crannies, the nuances of the building. She said, you learn to be careful when you're talking in the lobby because the lighting fixtures throw your voice in weird ways. And she said, you learn that in certain areas there are cracks that you'll feel when you skate. And she said, you learn the stairs are different heights from the countless times that you run them during practice.
That started after I retired, fortunately.
She says, though? She says, most of all, you learn to love the building and what it did
really,
for so many
really,
people.
Yep, it really felt like part of our family and all the staff at the Gardens, Greg and Dreamer and Renee and everybody. I mean, it was part of the Cincinnati Roller Girls. And it's so hard to imagine ourselves not being there and not playing there because it was such a big part of our whole existence was spent practicing and playing there. So it's just a really special place for our team.
Yeah, and Carly goes on to say that she has so many thank yous to give to Jerry Henderson.
That's Screamer.
Who maintained the Gardens
Screamer,
and made it shine for over the last 30-odd years. And she says he knew that building like no one else knew that building.
That's correct.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Lauren, and I know you all feel the same way about Jerry as well. And Jerry was a long time. There's not a proper title to give him because he's a little bit of everything of the building. And he honestly put so much TLC into what the Roller Girls were doing. And I think he is so responsible for the production that went on for what the event actually was on game night. He made it that good.
Yeah. We felt like rock stars in that place. You know, the lighting, the lights would go down and then come up as we were introduced, and the crowd would just go nuts. I mean, there was just no feeling like it.
Also at an event, it sticks in my mind, the smell of the hot dogs and the popcorn, and it just kind of
in the Gardens there was nothing like it.
So you had this extra sensory experience when you were at the Garden.
I'm going to be going through withdrawal without the popcorn.
Yeah, there's something about the way that it just smelled better in the Gardens. You're right, John. Lauren, the Roller Girls had the final event in Gardens history. That was on June 11th this year.
Right.
How did that feel playing that last game there?
Well,
how did everybody feel about
it? We didn't know. I mean, you know, every year for the past few years, you know, the building had been for sale for a few years. So every season, you know, at the end of every season, you know, we would realize, you know, that this could be our last game, but we never knew for sure. And it, you know, it kept hanging on for a couple more years. So, you know, everyone has always wanted to be at that last game, regardless in whatever capacity they're in with the team. But you know, we didn't know for sure. And now it's even more bittersweet looking back at it. You know, it's kind of neat that we were the last event ever there. You know, that will definitely go down in the Garden's history and in our history. But again, we're sad not to be returning for sure.
Lauren, since our listeners might not know, where were you? Have you found a new venue?
We have not. We're looking around. We have some promising needs that we're exploring, but we don't know for sure. We will definitely still be around. You know, it's not the end of the Centennial World. We'll be playing somewhere still. So just stay tuned, and we'll tell our fans as soon as we can where we'll be.
Lauren, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Sure. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
Bye, Lauren.
Bye, Lauren.
All right, bye-bye.
Lauren Bishop, one of the original founders of the Cincinnati Roller Girls Roller Derby team. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100 with your memories of the Cincinnati Gardens. Let's talk with Bud in Cincinnati. Hi, Bud.
Hello, guys. Hi, Greg. How you doing?
Hey, Bud. What's going on?
Doing well. I've probably shared a lot of these stories with you, but yeah, for your audience, I'll kick them up again if you don't mind. As I think I told you before when we've been together with Laura and Joe.
Oh, yeah. I know you're going to tell me old sword stories.
Yeah. you know, back 1951 or 52, myself, who lived in Bond Hill, and a lot of friends who lived in Swifton Village, we became famous followers of the Mohawks.
Or the Mohawks.
Mo Mantha and Bill Glad, I remember well. And, of course, all those players lived over in Swifton Village. So we all became fast friends of theirs and played Canadian football with them when they weren't playing hockey.
That's awesome.
And by the same token, we had an opportunity to go ahead and always hang out close to the clubhouse when they came out, and they'd give it the broken sticks and pucks and that kind of stuff. Some of the stuff that I think I've shared with you also was, and I hope the statute of limitations is passed. Is
okay, be careful here.
Myself and, I'm sorry, say it again?
Be careful here.
Yeah, right. About 10 of us who probably attended almost all the games in the evening, even during the week, during school year. And we typically go up on the front of the building, on the very side, where there's the doors that you can't walk in, but there are exits. And what we do is we basically go up there and wait for one of us to beg a ticket from somebody.
He'd sneak in somehow.
and once we got one person in, they would go inside, go through the turnstiles, and get in, and then they'd come down the steps right there, and all of a sudden, all 10 of us were in there. all for the price of one, or none, probably.
Yeah, you know, the problem, Bud, is it's not like the old ballparks where you could find a hole in the fence and look through. There are no holes in the building you can look through.
Hey, and we watched the Mohawks, but by the same token, in between the periods, we would run around on the catwalks up at the very ceiling of the building.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Is this still going on to this day? Or
I can either confirm or deny that.
Right, and we'd run around with water pistols, playing all sorts of games, climb up on the roof, going through a hole in the opening in the ceiling, and get up on the roof and look over to Cincinnati. Those were some of the most famous things. Like, I remember going over wrestling matches a few times and boxing. My sister actually skated there, and friends of ours who now live in Scottsdale, she was in the Ice Capades, and she became a pretty good skater in her own right in Cincinnati before she went off to the Ice Capades.
Hey, Bud, since you were from Bond Hill, talk a little bit about the early 50s. Was the Gardens kind of on the edge of town?
Roselawn. Certainly went out to Roselawn. Probably Redding was out there at the time. So, yeah, when you think of the older neighborhood, that was all there then. I mean, I grew up.
So it was
up
all
in,
suburbs back at that right. time? Yeah.
Yeah, but my mom and dad lived on Newfield Avenue right off Langdon Farm, just, you know, a quarter of a mile away from the Gardens. That was and they moved there in 42. I think they paid $7,000 for the house. It was during, you know, right after the war was over, or during the war. But yeah, I mean, we literally spent, that's probably the reason my grade point average in high school wasn't that well.
sounds like a great time though.
At the gardens.
Yeah.
And I probably, if I thought about it some more, I could probably think of some more memories of over there. But yeah, I never did get a chance to get over there and see. Greg invited us over to see the Hall of Fame there, and of course that's probably gone by now, isn't it, Greg?
Yeah. What's going to happen with that, Greg?
Well, yeah, it's and Mike can actually talk to that a little bit as well. I know Mike did a little bit of
and Bud, thanks
digging
for the call.
In the journalism.
We really appreciate it.
Hey, Bud, we'll see you soon. Thanks for calling.
Yeah. Take care. Bye.
Take care. For me personally, and what was in the, he was talking about the Legends Museum,
right,
the Hall of Fame. A lot of those items were privately owned and very graciously loaned to the building to show a lot of the history that was there. And Dave Green is the man who owned a majority of that stuff. And with the transition, everything going on right now, he's decided that he's going to auction off and sell a lot of the memorabilia, most of it, not quite all of it, but most of it. And I know one of the great, one of the, I don't sponsor, I don't know what word I'm allowed to use on public radio, one of the underwriters.
Okay.
And, but EBTH, Everything But the House, EBTH, will be within the next, I would imagine, middle of August into September, sometime around that time frame, be looking for an auction with a lot of the great memorabilia that was in the gardens.
Let's talk with Robert in Coryville. Hi, Robert.
Coming from Michigan and being an avid hockey player, it's exciting. Move to Cincinnati and have a place like the Garden to skate on Sunday night. There's drop-in hockey for adults. And I'd take all my three boys to a family skate that was organized by a hockey player for families to skate on the annex rink, which is, I believe, where they house the animals for the circus. And we would use chairs and toboggans. It was very informal. And we would, every year, we'd take a Christmas picture, like in September and October, when they first put down the ice, because the Zamboni would dump snow in the back of the rink. So it looked like we had, you know, mountains of snow as a backdrop for our Christmas picture, which is kind of neat.
That's great.
But we watched the, I mean, the Blink was the perfect size to watch the Mighty Ducks play. I didn't go back to the Mohawks era. But when Mike Babcock, who is now the Red Wings coach, I'm trying to, very successful coach. He was able to coach one of my sons when he was a squirt hockey player, and he was a tremendous person to work with. And those games are just—it's just more intimate in a rink. U.S. Bank is just too big, I think.
Yeah.
Some of the bigger hockey rinks with the NHL teams, like Nationwide and Columbus, but it was perfect to be up close and to watch a hockey game like the Mighty Ducks.
Yeah, the gardens were a nice intimate venue for all kinds of sporting events.
Well, and Mark, you have been with WVXU now for a while. Our first few years with the Cincinnati Mighty Ducks was on WVXU.
Yeah, we were calling games at that time. Yeah.
I was doing color with John Walton, who is now doing the Washington Capitals. Wow. So he's in the NHL.
So not to put you on the spot, Greg, but you were not only the announcer, but I'm told you helped flood the arena to put down the ice.
When I first – that is true. When I first started working there in early 2007, it was just about the end of the ice season that year. So that following year, the hockey season into later 2007, I wanted to know how we made the hockey ice. I had never been a part of anything like that. So I just told the guys downstairs, hey, you need help? Let me come down there. I was a good hose holder. I pretty much would just try to stay out of the way is what I do and not get painted. So.
Richard asked us a question by Facebook. Did the Stingers ever play at the Gardens?
That is a great – and Mike,
do you?
They did not. No, so. And no. Let
they
me,
were always at Riverfront Coliseum.
Yeah. That's the one thing that people will tell me all the time. Oh, yeah, I remember watching Stingers games at the Gardens. I hate to correct them, but it was the Mohawks, the Swords, and then a long
gap
right. that there was no hockey at the Gardens. The Stingers played downtown at the Coliseum, and then after the Stingers went away in the late 70s, there was no hockey again for a good 10 years, and then 1990, the Cyclones at the Gardens played again, and then the Mighty Ducks.
We'll continue our conversation about the Cincinnati Gardens. You can join us at 513-419-7100. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. My guest this afternoon, talking about the history of the Cincinnati Gardens and listening to your memories, our Director of Public Relations and Media Relations for the Gardens, Greg Waddell, longtime local sports writer, now at WCPO.com, Mike Dyer, and WVXU media beat blogger, John Kiesweter. You can join us 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Let's talk with Joe in Fairfax. Hi, Joe.
How you doing?
Good, thanks.
For me, it's a bunch of concerts in the early 80s, and it was much better than going downtown because there was parking 2 blocks away right on the street. I didn't have to pay an extra $3 or $4 to park when you're 17, 18. That's a lot of money to park, man, you know.
Who'd you see?
Oh, who didn't I see?
Yeah.
I mean, it was mostly hard rock, metal, stuff like that. But, awesome. If there was a show at the Garden, I think I saw Sammy Hagar down there.
Sammy played there, yep. All right, Van Halen.
Best show that I saw.
Which one?
I didn't see Van Halen down there. I didn't see Van Halen at the Coliseum. I saw them at the Coliseum.
I'm looking through. Van Halen was there for back-to-back sold-out nights on May 6th and 7th in 86. No, that would have been earlier than that. 85, I believe that was. They had back-to-back nights. Bon Jovi had back-to-back nights. And the concert era back then was a lot different than it is now. Obviously, there's not as many touring.
But you had AC/DC, right?
AC/DC?
Ozzy Osbourne.
Oh, yeah.
Megadeth?
I'm sure.
I've heard that. I'm not sure that's
Megadeth,
true or not. But
Iron Maiden had played there. I mean, you can go through all the heavy metal bands. They were there.
When was Pearl Jam there, Greg?
That, good question. I would say that would probably have been the very beginning of their careers, and they were a warm-up act. Was that for really Iron Maiden? I think they were a warm-up for Iron Maiden. It probably would have been about 89, 90, 91, somewhere around that era. But he's absolutely right. I mean, the 80s, I think anybody that went to high school in the 80s in this area went to some sort of a hard rock concert there, even a lot of country concerts. Conway Twitty, George Jones, and those guys. Tim McGraw played there. I mean,
and really, there's another generation who went to their very first rock concert when the Beatles played there in 64. I mean, when I did the 50th anniversary.
And that was before they got to Crosley Field, too.
Crosley Field was 66.
Right.
64 was their first North American tour, and the WSAI good guys brought them in. And many people told me, you know, that was their first rock concert. And and women told me they went and got their hair fixed and got it look real nice. And ten minutes later, it was
14,000.
14,000. Yeah, that was one of the largest attended concerts ever, attended events ever at the Gardens. For me, 2 years ago, when that was the 50th anniversary, Dusty Rhodes came back, and a lot of the local media wanted to interview him. He's one of the few around the area from the WSAI good guys that are still around. But listening to his stories about how that whole concert got set up, and that
they sent a telegram to England, and DJs put up $5,000 each,
yep.
And they get a telegram a couple of weeks later saying, yeah, you got them.
And they got them. And it was right at the very beginning of the Beatles run, too. That was their first U.S. tour. And the actual show that day that the Beatles performed in was about a half an hour. They were so new, such a new band at that point, they didn't have a lot of songs to play.
But even when they played in 66 and were coming up on the 50th of that, they were only a half an hour.
Yeah.
I mean, their singles were 2.5 minutes or so.
Exactly.
But the opening act, I think, was Righteous Brothers in
Jackie DeShannon was also part of the opening act there as well. Yeah.
So recently, when I toured the place with you, Greg, you showed me where the Beatles press conference was, so that picture of the Beatles, and it's a high school
hockey locker room. Yep.
Yeah. And I think that they all knew that as well. And I got to credit Jerry Henderson as well. We call him Screamer at the building. By going back and looking at the old pictures,
now you got me curious.
Why we call him Screamer?
Yes.
You can. Why, if you would imagine.
Can I Google that?
It would be more, a name like Screamer working in a building where there's a lot of high energy going on there. He sometimes would scream. And
like Carly said, the acoustics are kind of bizarre in the building anyhow, so sound travels.
It definitely. Yeah, with Screamer around, sometimes it would travel, that's for sure. But no, as far as we were talking about.
The Beatle Press Conference.
The Beatle Press Conference, yeah, with St. Xavier. There was a conduit that had electric and then a hot water pipe that was right there. And he had figured out that was the only spot in the building that had that same configuration. So he figured out then that was where it was. And then Dusty Rhodes 2 years ago confirmed it.
We walked through the locker room last year with Adrian Smith, the 50th anniversary of his 1966 NBA All-Star Game MVP. And he still had fond memories of walking through there.
Mike, and thank you for letting me be a part of walking around with him. What an absolute gentleman Adrian Smith was. And to see his emotions that he remembers, not only from being a member of the Cincinnati Royals, but that 66 All-Star game where he became the MVP, very unlikely MVP. It was, that gave me chills to walk around and to see how much that history meant to him personally. That was one of my greatest professional memories.
And he still has the car.
And Tim tweeted us. He said that's one of his favorite memories, that he went to that 1966 NBA All-Star game.
Well, you think
Bill, Lucas, Russell, you name it.
Yeah.
Think of it, you know, the NBA hasn't been here in 40 years, and yet an NBA All-Star game was here in Cincinnati. But it was such a different NBA because, as your story pointed out earlier this year, Mike, it was in black and white television.
Right.
It was syndicated. It wasn't on one of the networks. And the announcer was...
Harry Carey. Jack Buck was actually there, too.
Seriously.
I'm just unbelievable. Yeah. Harry Carey presented the car to
All-Star broadcast group, too. So there was actually, that's one of the most attended events ever as well. 13,600 at that event.
What was the biggest attended event at the Gardens ever?
This one, I've never seen a picture or any kind of film or video of it. In October of 1960, it was similar to what we're in now, the heat of the political battle. It wasn't the convention, but there was a political rally, Richard Nixon running for president against John F. Kennedy, and Richard Nixon and Henry Cabot Lodge, his VP at that time, his
running mate,
nomination,
his running mate.
They attracted 19,000 at that, and that's through Inquirer stories. We've gone back and
so that being 14,000 in the stands and 5 on the floor.
I've never seen a pit. I don't know where they fit them all. We've debated that inside the building numerous times. Like, where did they put them all?
I could see like 14,000 being about as much as you could hold there.
I mean, they were in every nook and cranny. That's for sure.
So Nixon came back in 68.
Correct.
And then you also had Martin Luther King there in 64. You had Barry Goldwater in 64. And then George W. Bush in like 06 or
2004. His reelection. Yeah. That was the two sitting presidents. It was Richard Nixon in 68. Or no, he wasn't a sitting president. No. He was running. So
he was running.
He was just running this. So it would have been George W. Bush was the only sitting president that did a rally. But Mike, you had mentioned earlier too some of the most attended events, political rallies,
top three. I mean, really, you just named it, the two Nixon ones, and then the Barry Goldwater rally. there you
different
go.
Era,
think of all the other the events that have been to the Gardens, and it's the top three were political events.
They were all in the 60s, right?
Right.
Yep.
Plus the NBA All-Star game, you said was. Top 10 also in the
66.
Oscar actually made his debut 6 days before that Nixon Cabot Lodge rally.
So I've got to give Mike, Mike and I have these ongoing email changes where he finds all this obscure history that I didn't know about. He blows me away with some of these things like that. That's another
Oscar
one I
actually
know.
Signed at Crewe Tower, signed his contract.
Oscar played there, and Jerry Lucas played there with the Royals.
Well, then
he also played there with because Middletown High School.
You
got to
remember the Middies Hamilton games were huge draws too. I think they drew like 13,000 people.
I talked to Jerry Lucas 2 weeks ago. He says, I still remember that electric atmosphere. It was unbelievable. People came
high
from all over states.
Yeah, for a high school basketball game at that point, Middletown and Hamilton. It was regular season. Yeah these aren't playoff
games.
It's
always been a fierce rivalry. If you from Butler County, you know it, don't you?
You know
Middletown and Hamilton.
I got to admit, I'm a Middletown graduate.
Yeah,
so.
Big game.
I'm a Middie.
Middletown native. So.
Diane wrote along those lines. She said, my favorite Cincinnati Gardens event was when Fairfield played Middletown. And the tournament, I think I mentioned this earlier, and she said they went up against Jerry Lucas and
had no chance.
Because
Lucas won 76, 77.
76 game win streak,
straight
including
game.
Two
every
state
game
titles.
As a sophomore, every game as a junior, and then lost in the quarterfinals of the tournament in his senior year.
People forget the state basketball finals were there in 53 and 55, too. So.
And I believe someone at one point, and I may have it, is we're doing a lot of the things we are at the building right now, I found someone had given me a DVD, and I believe it's from that championship game at the Gardens from the early 50s. It's all black and white, but obviously.
Good stuff.
Let's get some more calls in. Let's talk to Linda in Northern Kentucky. Hi, Linda.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. Go ahead, what's your memory?
Well, I am thinking this had to be the late 50s and early 60s, because I graduated from Regina in 63. I grew up in Edgemont, which was near, like kind of in the middle of Roselawn. And I used to sneak up there into the back doors somehow when they had horse shows.
Lots of people sneaking into the gardens lately, yeah.
That's why I thought there was more than that roller derby.
Well, you know, they had these wonderful horse shows, and then my other interest was skating, And they used to have open skating every week. And I think sometimes we actually got to be in the main building. There was like an annex that we used quite often. And they had open skates. Seems like it was on Friday or Saturday night. It's the first time a boy asked me to skate and held my hand. It was where I learned to skate backwards in my little skating skirt. And it was just a wonderful place for kids to go.
I did that, too. You could be on the main rink, or you'd go through the portico and go over to the annex, and the door would be open, and then you could continue skating there, just depending on which one of the two was too crowded at the time or what you were trying to do.
Yeah, Linda,
exactly.
Wonderful memory.
Yeah, Linda, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Let's talk to Sandy in Price Hill. Hi, Sandy.
Hi.
And go right ahead. What's your memory?
Yeah, you guys make me feel old. Mine goes back to 1955.
I'd love to hear them.
A radio station. I'm going to guess WSAI, and they had a contest. You had to write in and say why you wanted to go to this concert. Well, son of a gun, I won. Two tickets. Went to my first concert there in 1955. It was so cool.
Who
was it?
That's 60 years ago. You really think I remember? I've been to so many concerts.
You just remember it was fun.
Oh, I was so thrilled because I won this contest. I got to go for free.
Great.
And then later years, when I got married, you know, my husband, he built choppers, and we would show them at the bike and car shows at the gardens.
Right.
So, and I've had the kids skating there, ice skating. So, you know, in a long history, I hated to see it close.
Sandy, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's talk to Joe and Coleraine. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
I remember when I was a kid, it was probably 67, 68. They took your little slot cars down there. We used to go down there on a Saturday afternoon and run slot cars. And I think what she was talking about, the annex, I think that's what it was. So we went down there, and then WWF, we went there and sat way in the top of the nosebleed. But it was all exciting for me and my kids. And then I believe when I was a kid, they had car shows there too. That I don't know if it was Cavalcade of Customs or it might have been before then, but.
Yeah, they were there for a while.
Yep.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah. Okay, thanks.
Let's talk to David in Anderson. Hi, David.
Yeah, hi. Well, first thing, I saw a Stevie Wonder concert probably in the mid to late 60s. I don't know. Do you guys have information on when anybody appeared there?
You know, there's a lot of scattered. The what I called earlier, the first year of the building, we don't have a lot of detailed records of exact dates of shows. We've had a good friend of the building. His name is John Perrin, and I want to make sure I recognize John.
Yes,
he has done so much research for us at the building over the years, and going back and trying to nail down a lot of the dates of these concerts and shows and events and the largest crowds. And I know Stevie Wonder did perform sometime in the 60s. I could not tell you an exact date, but
okay.
I'm guessing mid-late 60s would be my guess.
Yeah. And then I remember learning how to skate in that annex. We used to go every Saturday or Sunday for skating lessons. So there was they had skating lessons and free skates, like that other woman was saying. There was quite a bit going on there.
Oh, yeah. There was always ice skating was a big part of that building's history, that's for sure.
I was kind of hoping we'd get a caller to tell us I saw Evel Knievel jump the...
Yeah, he was there. And David, by the way, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Yeah, Evel Knievel was there.
Did he jump buses? What did he jump?
Actually, there's a couple pictures that are out there. It was about... 5 or 6 cars and 3 or 4 vans. It wasn't anything that I don't know if they had to get donations for him to jump over, but there's some video out there every once. I don't know if it's on YouTube or I want to say, Mike, it was on WCBO.com.
I think I've seen that.
Yeah, and you can see it. They had the big ramp from him up near the top of the arena near the front of the building, and he would go up there to get the speed, turn around and come back down that, hit the ramp, and then go in through the Zamboni door was the landing ramp, and it gave him enough room so he wouldn't run into the back wall of the building.
Bonnie over email says she saw the ice capades at the gardens as a child, and she skated on the weekends. We've heard that several times here. Oscar Robertson and the Royals in the 1960s are another memory of Bonnie's. And she said she also saw Jimi Hendrix in 68. Yep. Apparently, he set his guitar on fire. So can you confirm or deny that
one? I cannot confirm or deny that one, but obviously there's the famous video of Jimi Hendrix putting his guitar on fire at Montrose. So I would imagine it was probably about that same time.
I think it was a staple of his act.
It may have been at Woodstock that he did the burning the guitar thing. But I got to throw out, too, my Pete Robinson and his family have been the ones that have kept this building going for all these years. And he's chiming in to me, telling me his favorite event was actually Neil Young in concert back in 91. Neil Young and Crazy Horse, another one of the many legends that have played through that building. And then also some hockey histories, Teemu Selanne, Paul Kariya were Anaheim Mighty Ducks, actually the Mighty Ducks of Anaheim, and they came and did an exhibition game in Cincinnati as well. So you had some NHL greats that played there in the 90s and the mid-90s.
Let's talk to Jennifer and Amelia. Hello, Jennifer.
Hello.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. My best, and it's still one of the best memories of my life, was having front row center tickets to Bon Jovi in 1987. And the security guard who was in front would let my best friend, my sister, and I put our arms underneath his so that we could actually, I'll use the word grope.
Okay.
Well, it was just their legs, but you know, they're you have John Bon Jovi dancing on stage with all the hair and everything, and you're 15 and you're getting to, you know, touch his calf muscles. It was quite the memory. It's still a great memory.
That is hard to top.
It's a G-rated show,
yeah,
I thought.
Not too many 15-year-olds get to do that. So it's still a great memory. And We met, my mom, God bless her, she would drive us down there for Motley Crue. She sat through Loverboy, Madonna. She was not real pleased with the Beastie Boys, who opened up for Madonna. But she still took us. We abandoned her during Loverboy to go get the opening act, which was the Hooters.
Yep.
Their autograph, because at that time, in 87, 88, the opening act's dressing room was just right off the hallway.
Hey, Jennifer, we have to wrap things up here, but we appreciate the call, and we appreciate the memory, too.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for joining me this afternoon.
Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Great fun.
Director of Public Relations and Media Relations for the Gardens, Greg Waddell, longtime local sports writer, now at WCPO.com, Mike Dyer, and WVXU media beat blogger John Keysweater. You can read John's recent essay on the history of the Cincinnati Gardens at WVXU.org, and you can also read Michael Keating's memories and see his photos of the gardens at WVXU.org. And let's not forget Mike. Mike wrote a piece on this as well. You can find that at WCPO.com.